Hello, I'm Chris Noble, and welcome to our series on Catholic apologetics. Today I'm going to be talking about the supernatural life and the soul. I'm going to be talking about the basic truth of who the human person is and what it means to be a spiritual person. To be a spiritual person is to be oriented towards our highest end, to be the greatest thing that we can be as human beings. Now, first, I'm going to talk about the supernatural life, just the supernatural life itself, so we get a clarity as to what the supernatural life is, because that's what comes into our souls. To be a spiritual person means to be participating in supernatural reality. The universe is a mystery. It's a mystery of supernatural reality. And we need somebody, namely the author of the universe, to tell us about this mystery, to reveal it, to reveal its meaning and our destiny in it. Now, God has given us a revelation, and the church gave us what God gave the church. The church sees the universe. The church sees the ultimate truth of reality. Now, you can describe this reality as a map, as if God gave us a map of the universe, an outline of the universe. And what is that outline? Well, it first talks about God. God is eternal and infinite, holy, loving. He's personal. He's a trinity. He's the creator. And the second part of the outline is humanity. Human beings are finite, are made of body and soul, created in time and fallen and redeemed by Christ. And the gap between the creator and a human being is infinite because God is infinite. But he's with us, though. He's with us because he loves us. Each individual person is born into a natural life, born into nature, and is reborn again into a life of grace or into a supernatural life. United with Christ in his mystical body, he's aided by angels and hindered by devils, destined for heaven and in danger of hell. Now that, in a very brief outline, is the outline of the universe. And if one understands that, those simple truths that we really have given to us in the basic creed and in the teachings of the church, we have an outline of the universe. We see reality in a way that nobody else can because God revealed it to us. Now, we don't naturally see these things. We don't see them without God's grace. This outline exists only because God shows us. This is not natural knowledge. I compare supernatural knowledge to natural knowledge by talking about a landscape, a landscape that's covered with fog and clouds, and God's supernatural knowledge comes into it and begins to dissolve the clouds and fog away, and suddenly you begin to see this landscape whereas you couldn't see it before. God helps us to see the universe. Now, in order to really enter into or experience or receive the supernatural reality, we must participate in that supernatural reality. We must become a part of it. And the way we do that is by being born again. We're baptized. When we're baptized, God comes and dwells within the soul. Through his presence within the soul, he gives us his grace. And he communicates to us the power to be lifted above our natural created self so that we can participate in the divine life of God, which is above our natural powers. Our natural powers, body and soul, cannot attain to that kind of supernatural reality. Now, what is the supernatural life not? It is not something that's ghostly, like communicating with the dead or communicating beyond the grave with beings or something like that. It's not magic. That's not the supernatural life, developing psychic powers. In fact, those are very often called preternatural, in other words, at the edge of natural life, and it's at the dark edge of natural life. That's not the supernatural. And not even necessarily having visions or miraculous experiences is the supernatural, not necessarily. That's not necessarily it. The supernatural life is something over and above the natural. Our nature could never grow to it. Nature can only receive the supernatural as a gift from God, and that gift is actually, ultimately, God himself. Now, the supernatural is a created participation in the life of God. A created participation in the life of God. It's important to understand that God is uncreated. God is uncreated. We are created. So when he gives us a share in his own life, we have to receive this additional gift that is above our natures. Now, there are different kinds of life. A stone has no life. A plant has a certain kind of life, nutrition and growth and reproduction. An animal has sensation and the ability to ward off danger and locomotion, and a human has intellectual knowledge and free will. So you can see by looking at our world that there are different qualities of life, each quality endowed with a higher quality of existence. Now there is a huge gulf between the non-living stone and the living animals and plants and human beings. There's a big, huge gulf between what's inorganic and organic, what's not living and living. But the gulf between the natural and the supernatural is far greater. It's far greater than a gulf ever was. But God gives us that life. Supernatural life is sanctifying grace. Not only is it the passport to heaven, but it's the very power to live in heaven. We couldn't have beatitude. We couldn't have an infinite eternal relationship with God unless we had that supernatural life that He gives us. This creates vast effects in the soul, enabling the soul to do things that by nature it could never do. The supernatural gives us that kind of a power. When we're baptized, we receive the gifts of faith, hope, and love. We receive the moral virtues of prudence, justice, and fortitude, and temperance in potential, and receive all the gifts of the Holy Spirit in potential to be used to grow up in God, to have this supernatural life and these gifts increased in us. Now, when we're supernaturally endowed, then we are able to cooperate with God's grace to gain salvation. Then we can cooperate with Him and to become holy, to become sanctified. By a supernatural endowment, I mean raised from being merely creatures of God to being children of God. Raised from being merely creatures of God to being children of God. In order to live the life of heaven, the soul has to have new powers. The two powers of the soul are intellect and will. And the new powers are knowing and loving. God gives us the power to know Him and see His revelation, and to love Him, to become completely unified with Him. And these are powers over and above our natural powers. And as we say yes to these powers, and as we grab these powers that God gives to us, we become closer and closer to God, and therefore closer and closer to infinite eternal revelation of God, which is Himself. Now, therefore, we need a new life principle. We need new life. And the principle of new life is a principle of operation given to my soul. It must be given to me so that I can live in heaven. But it's given to us now so that we can live on earth and get a foretaste of that life, get a foretaste of that power, get a foretaste of that indwelling of God, of His love and His gentleness and His truth. And so a supernatural life is given to us so that we have meaning on earth. And it really, the very meaning of existence on earth is to have supernatural life. That's what it means to be born and born again. People who do not have the born again experience through baptism, who don't have God's supernatural life in them, however He chooses to come to them, if in other ways, they are missing out on the meaning of life. They're missing out on what life is all about. God's life is to be increased forever. There's no possibility for its limit or growth in us. God's life is infinite, and I'm talking about sanctifying grace or supernatural life. God's life is the created result of the energizing of God's life in our souls. I mean, grace is the created result. Now, God uses the church to give us supernatural grace, sanctifying grace. This life comes to us in baptism when we're born again of the Holy Spirit. Now, the way I look at it is like electricity going through a wire. The power lights up a whole room. The wire lights up the whole room. Grace works in the nature that it finds. Grace works in the nature that we have, and then, like, lights it up in that sense. So grace builds on nature in that sense. Now, the human person is made of body and soul. We are not just bodies, and we're not just souls. We're body-soul. Matthew 16:26 says, "What does it profit a man to gain the whole world and suffer the loss of his own soul?" The human nature, because of his spiritual nature, is elevated high above all the animals. Now, I love animals like anybody else, and I think it's wrong to be cruel to them, but the human nature is something above qualitatively above the animals. We have a unique dignity, and we have transcendent worth because we're made in God's image and likeness. God made us to be his sons and daughters. Now, how did he do this? What gives us our dignity, our unique dignity? Well, it's our souls. To be human is to be body-soul, or ensouled body, if you will, to be embodied soul. And the soul is the higher principle of existence, if you will, or reality, than the body. Now, how can we understand this a little bit more? Well, the soul is spiritual, and the body is material. The soul is a spiritual substance, if you will, and the body a material substance. Now, a human being is a union of spirit and matter. Therefore, we belong to two worlds, a spiritual world and a material world. In fact, they're united in us. To be human is not just to have a soul, and not just to have a body, but to be body slash soul. Soul and body are not put together like tinker toys, but they're one, forming one complete individual. We would be less than human to be only bodies, and less than human to be only souls. As Aquinas says, we become one single substance under body and soul. A substance stands under something. So an individual is body soul. They work together to form a single substance. But we attribute to one and the same subject spiritual and material activities. A spiritual activity is thinking. People don't think of it as that very often, but it is. Spiritual activity is, one of the spiritual activities is thinking, or faith is a spiritual activity. Now, that's an activity of the soul. Activities of our body is the five senses. You know, the we see, we hear, we taste, we walk, those kind of things. Are acting in our material nature. So the same person says, I am thinking, I am worshiping, I am loving, those are of the soul, and the same person also says, I see and I hear and I do. Genesis 1:26 said, and the Lord God formed man out of the slime of the earth and breathed into his face the breath of life, and man became a living soul. So you see in Genesis chapter 1 the two principles there, the principle of the earth and the principle of the spirit. God breathed the spirit into the body. God gave a human being a material and spiritual nature. So there's a twofold element in man. Both elements are vital, and both belong to what it means to be human. Otherwise, you wouldn't be human. One is not extra to itself. To be human is to join the two worlds of matter and spirit into one universe. And we do it by belonging to both. The human being is a link between the spiritual and God and the material universe. I'm going to pause for a little bit and we'll come back in a few minutes. Back again, talking about what it means to be spiritual and material. What is the supernatural life and what is the soul? What does it mean to be spiritual and what does it mean to be material? The soul is spiritual. What does that mean? It means that the soul knows and the soul loves. The soul has a mind and a will. Those are spiritual activities, created spiritual activities. To be spiritual means to have yourself so fully in grasp that you never become something else. As far as I can remember, I wasn't anybody else when I was born. I'm still the same person. I've gotten older and developed and all that, but my soul hasn't changed. It's always been there. I can never become some other thing. Now, something spiritual has no parts. Now, you need to pay attention. This is a little bit tricky, but it helps, it clears up a lot of problems about the nature of the human person. A spirit has no parts and it can't be taken apart. It's called a simple substance. It can exist only as a whole. And only God can destroy it, but he won't ever. And it does not occupy space. The soul does not occupy time and space. It's spiritual. It is, in a sense, in that sense, invisible. But it certainly is real and concrete. Now, what is space? Space is the arrangement that matter makes to spread its own parts. In other words, one part next to another, one molecule next to another, one organ next to another. Things are in time and space by being next to each other. Now, what is, so the soul is spiritual, okay? It always has a whole of itself. It's simple. It doesn't break apart. Matter is made up of parts. Our bodies are made up of molecules. All matter is made up of particles. These parts can be separated, and they can be brought into relationship with other parts. What has parts can cease to be itself and become something else. When I die, my body will go into the ground, and it will become part of the ground, and it will become dirt and whatever else it will be. It will no longer be my body. Now, thank God, God will give me a resurrected body as long as I believe. But the fact of the matter is that the body falls apart and becomes something else. The soul never do that. The soul will never do that. Now, how are we to understand the union of two principles, one in space and one not in space, okay? Spiritual and material. Well, I think the best way I like to look at it is to look at, take an example that I use quite a bit, and that's a pot of boiling water on a stove. Now, there's a flame under the stove. Say it's a gas stove. There's a flame, and the water's boiling, and it's boiling. Now, we sense the presence of the flame, or the flame is in all of the water in a sense of heat. It's heated the water to make it boil. Now, an onlooker might be deceived in saying the water has energy, the water's doing all this, and the flame doesn't exist. The flame is a superstition. But we see the movement of life and the heat of the water, and that's due to the superior energy of the flame. The flame has a life of its own, and it gives the water energy. So that's a good way. In some ways, not a very good example, but it helps to begin to look at the relationship between the body and the soul. The flame has a life of its own, and it can continue whether the water or not is there. If you take the pot of boiling water away, the flame can still continue. Our souls can still continue without our bodies. But the soul is distinct from the body, but it is not detached from the body. It's not something separate. Body and soul go together as one reality. They go together. The human soul is, in scholastic language, a subsistent, substantial form. It has a certain existence in its own right, and not only is part of the human composite, the soul, but we can separate it out and understand the soul and body as two principles of being, but to be human, both of these things are united. Now, I want to get into the spirituality of the soul. A lot of people who argue that there is no soul are really arguing that there's nothing spiritual, that there's nothing spiritual at all, that it's just simply our imagination. Well, we've already saw how the soul is simple. It's indivisible, and it's not in space. Now, the intellect is a spiritual power, and it does not use a bodily organ such as the brain to think. The brain is a material organ. Okay, now, there's a relationship between intellect and brain, but what that is, nobody's able to explain. Nobody's found that out, and I don't think anybody will, because the soul is beyond scientific knowledge. Now, the characteristic of the material is concrete, indivisible, extended in time and space, like this podium. But ideas that the mind thinks are universal. They're abstract. They are not, that does not mean they're unreal. Now, ideas like truth and beauty and goodness and justice, honesty, the idea of human being, the idea of tree, immaterial ideas of God and angels, we can all think of these things. And they exist, they can be a reality to us. Just think of what it would be like in any country if there were no justice. If the idea, the invisible idea, we can express it through words, but justice, the concept itself, is invisible. If that didn't exist in a culture, there would be total injustice and total chaos, and it would be horrible. So these invisible things that supposedly don't have any reality are quite important to the human race. Now, these things can't flow from the brain because the brain is extended in space. Ideas are invisible, like I said. Thoughts are indivisible. Remember, everything in the soul is indivisible. It can't be divided. The act whereby the mind apprehends an idea is a unitive, intuitive act. directly contrary to the notion of a bunch of cells or molecules somehow expressing this thought like a hormone or something or a secretion of a substance. The brain can't think thoughts. The soul and somehow uses the brain as an expression of its thinking self. So material things, the material brain naturally divides things into parts, and universals and abstract ideas can be perceived in space or time, but they don't come from space or time. Now, St. Thomas Aquinas argued for the spirituality of the intellect in this way. He said, the intellect is capable of apprehending all spiritual natures. The intellect and the soul, which is not a sensible body or a corporeal being or thing or organ, is capable of knowing the natures of all bodies. I can know the nature of all trees. I can have an experience of that reality through my mind. I can know them. The intellect is the power of knowing. Bodily organs can receive sensible forms only. For example, the eye perceives colors, but it is not itself colored. It can receive a color. It receives colors and forms only from other material reality. The intellect can know all material qualities of all things, and it must not have any of them. It must be immaterial and spiritual to be able to gather in a universal way knowledge from the world. If that was difficult to understand, I hope it wasn't. Another way to talk about the spirituality of the soul is self-reflection. The soul has the capacity to turn in on itself and reflect upon itself. The soul can look inside itself and enter itself and its entire self all at once. We can contemplate our own being. Now, no material thing can do that, can reflect totally upon its own being. A material thing can reflect only on one part at a time, like a piece of paper folded up next to itself reflects upon itself. It can reflect the other side of the paper. Material things are extended in space, therefore their reflection is always of parts, nothing extended. The eye can't see itself. The ear can't hear itself. But the soul can see itself. And the soul can listen to itself, can have an experience of itself. Only something spiritual could do that. Something that is spiritual can be totally present to itself and be totally present to another thing. Now, animals are not totally present to another thing. They can be present to one thing at a time, but I wouldn't say ever that an animal is totally present to my whole self. They can't relate to the whole self as a human being. They can relate to me as a master or something like that. But to know somebody in a human spiritual sense is a far more magnificent thing. Self-consciousness, self-reflection is spiritual. Memory is also another way. There is an abiding personal identity in us. There is an abiding personal identity. There's a unity of consciousness in us. We go through all kinds of different conscious states. We think different things. We experience different things. But there's one ego. There's one underlying reality under all these sensations and states that remains unchanged. Every thought of the past brings with it awareness of the self. Whenever I think of the past, I think of myself. I'm aware of myself thinking of the past. Our ideas and feelings and acts are comprehensible only as expressions of an indivisible soul. What sense can ideas have, or feelings or actions, unless there's a human subject doing these things that inheres with us all the time as one individual person? The last thing I want to touch on today is the immortality of the soul. And this is also something that some people have a hard time believing, that the soul is immortal, that we are immortal, that there's life after death. Now, I want to go about this by saying this. The intellect is the power of the soul. Now, it forms universal and abstract ideas that last for a long time. Some ideas in my life have lasted through my entire life. Now, the soul then acts upon these ideas with the will. Now, people have done this since the beginning of history. There have been ideas that have been in existence since the beginning of history. Immortal ideas grasped by immortal souls. Now, a mortal being, or a being that's not immortal, that could not grasp immaterial, immortal, universal abstract ideas. For example, the idea that we're going to live forever creates a desire that we're going to live forever. Whatever exists seeks to retain its existence in a manner in accord with its nature. An animal has the instinct for self-preservation. It seeks for food and fights enemies. Humans, endowed with an intellectual knowledge, know existence in an absolute way and know that existence is not limited by material conditions because we have this idea of immortality, of a transcendent reality. We are not limited by time or by particular organs, or not even by space. Therefore, the human soul can form a concept of forever, the concept of forever, that existence lasts forever, and from this knowledge comes the desire to live forever. Otherwise, death wouldn't be such a horrible thing for us. We wouldn't want to avoid it so much. There's a principle in nature that nature does nothing in vain. In other words,